This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and I'm really glad that you're with us. We have a lot of great information to share with you this weekend, and we'd like to start, as we always do, with our co-host, Mr. Joe McKenzie. He is the founder of Ripple Connects. He turns candidates into contenders. You can find him online, rippleconnects.com, 763-438-1621. I know that there are some new people who are listening to our program for the very first time. When I talk about turning candidates into contenders, what does that really mean, Joe McKenzie?
Well, we Ripple Connects team works one-on-one with our clients to get them in a position to contend for the job that they want and they deserve. We've always said that anybody could apply and that would make them a candidate, but a contender goes through a certain level of discernment and preparedness to make sure that they know that they're walking into a job that they're going to thrive and love and have that overall career satisfaction. That's a contender mindset.
All right. I love being a contender. And as you talk about having a contender mindset, you've also talked, and I've heard you say and on this program and different seminars, that being a volunteer is really a key component in having a satisfying career. And I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about identifying meaningful volunteer opportunities and if they still even exist in COVID-19.
Absolutely. And you're right. A volunteer component of your career is a healthy outlet. I was in the middle of being at the third time I was in a position where I was on the outside looking in because of a merger. And because I was volunteering on a board for a nonprofit in St. Paul, that was that highlight. That was that environment that allowed me to get through that painful point in my career that I was being let go because of a merger. So yes, volunteering is an important component for everybody's career, but it is more difficult today, Freddie. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Many nonprofits cannot bring in volunteers to work hands-on, but that doesn't stop us from still volunteering with the technology and the opportunities that are out there. And so, Freddie, I like to view this as, you know, volunteer leadership. It may not always be roll up your sleeves and be on site doing something. It may be where it's your mind, it's your input, it's your cognitive diversity that you're sharing to solve problems for either your faith organization, Freddie, a nonprofit, serving somewhere. And I think everybody with the technology today doesn't have to get in their car and drive somewhere because we're staying safe in the middle of a pandemic by using a lot of the technology. So I want to open up just the topic of volunteer opportunities still exist. Mm-hmm. You may not be moving boxes or serving a meal or what have you, but you can still, our minds, our ideas, our creativity is still welcomed in a volunteer way.
Everyone, we're talking with Joe McKenzie, our career expert on New Beginnings this weekend. We're talking about identifying meaningful volunteer opportunities in the midst of COVID-19. When you talk about meaningful and regular, define that idea. What do you mean meaningful and regular?
Well, I think if you carve out a meaningful volunteer opportunity, it will become a regular part of your life. Mm-hmm. If it's something that doesn't have a lot of meaning to you and you see that as is not a great use of your time or you don't get a satisfaction about being a part of it, then it doesn't become a regular way. But I think meaningful, knowing that you're making a difference in someone or some organization's life, more than likely equates to meaningful. Do you agree with that?
It does. Making a difference is a big deal. So finding those meaningful things, it seems as if that's in your natural wheelhouse, things that are really close to you. And you mentioned at the outset, perhaps even your faith organization or maybe where you attended school. Are these examples that you're talking about?
Absolutely. If you know that you could work via Zoom to help someone understand mathematics or teach a speech class and be a mentor to someone from your college or your high school, or you led up a a small group in your faith organization, and you knew that that next week someone came back and says, hey, because of your work, I was able to achieve this. I would think if you've done it right, or you know that you've impacted, made a difference, that's the definition of meaningful to most of us. But then that opportunity to regain that the next time around, it will become a regular component of your life. And a regular part of your life ultimately helps your career as a whole. And that's why I've always said, I think some volunteer component should be a part of your career, because it helps balance you, helps bring that self-confidence, grows out your meaningful network. It also uncovers some of the transferable skills. How did you know that you were going to be good at that until you were put in that position on a volunteer basis? So I think even though in the middle of a pandemic, there are opportunities, nonprofits, faith organizations, your schools, your community are looking for people to step up and have that little volunteer component to your life.
How valuable is volunteering to your overall career?
I think it's invaluable. I have met some of my mentors. I have learned some leadership, hands-on, granular leadership approaches while serving on nonprofit boards the last 10 years. And now I lead a nonprofit. Many of those, for myself, many of those experiences have helped me to lead today. For me, volunteering was invaluable to my career growth. And I do think that everybody can gain something from it. It could be a new skill. It could be just an awareness of your community. You could meet someone that you want to collaborate with. And ultimately, you know you're driving outcomes in your community, in your faith organization, in your school. That just that piece, Freddie, is invaluable to many people, because careers can be stressful, but volunteer activities can balance that out. That's why it's so valuable to have that one, that something. Last week we talked about looking forward to something in the middle of a pandemic during these stressful times. What if you look forward to that volunteer activity each month? That will help your career.
Wow. Joe McKenzie talking with us this morning about the meaningful volunteer opportunities in the midst of COVID-19. I've looked on LinkedIn a lot here lately, and I don't see a lot of entries where people have listed their volunteer work. Is listing that on LinkedIn or your resume, is that passe, or are we missing the real opportunity here?
I think it's an opportunity to show your willingness to grow, get outside your comfort zone, but also to understand the bigger picture, those new skills. I don't think volunteer experience should ever be minimized or hid. I think it's something that should be complementary to your career. And LinkedIn allows us to do that. LinkedIn also is an opportunity for us to identify some volunteer activities that we're looking for. And I do think it should be acknowledged, and be proud of your volunteer work. I really do. I think most employers, prospective employers, would see that as a benefit if you're out in the community, learning, staying engaged, understanding, working as a small group, a team, leadership, what have you.
So what would be your prescription for us this weekend? What can we do right now to move in that direction, Joe McKenzie?
Give some thought to what gives meaning to you. If you like working with individuals, you like working with seniors, do you like working on solving a problem that's maybe existing in the community, start to think about what gives true meaning to you, and then start connecting the dots. I think two actionable steps this weekend is just asking for what you want. Don't say yes to everybody that says, hey, we need a volunteer over here. Be clear on what you're asking for. And so you let your network bring those opportunities to you. But also there's some good online resources out there. I have referred people to the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits job board, where you can just cue in volunteer opportunities and you may see a new opportunity. The internet gives us a lot of opportunities to find what's out there. Those would be the two actionable steps, Freddie. Ask for what you want and make sure people know what you're looking for, and look at those online resources out there to to bring those volunteer opportunities to you so you can discern if this is a meaningful one that may turn into a regular volunteer engagement.
And I also heard you say document that on your resume or in your LinkedIn profile as well.
Absolutely. It's complementary to the work that you're doing. And it, and you never know. It's something that you, as you, you know, semi-retire, retire, this may be a great way to stay engaged. And the health benefits alone on volunteering is clear in the data that we see out there. The more you're engaged, the more you're giving back, that sharing those gifts is a very healthy way to approach your retirement.
Joe, you do some fine work at Ripple Connects.
Yes, we do, Freddie Bell. We turn candidates into contenders.
And you're listening to New Beginnings.
If you are ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. That's RippleConnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. For more information, RippleConnects.com.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think Real Possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. You see, AARP is hosting free Movies for Grown-Ups screenings at theaters across the metro. They're helping protect families from identity theft and scams with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And AARP volunteers are helping people in need complete their tax returns free of charge. So whether you're a caregiver, someone who's trying to save for retirement, or if you just want to save money and connect with friends and neighbors for fun at local events, then AARP has resources for you. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/Twin Cities.
We're talking to Kathy. She's the project lead for the COVID Care Project with North Point Health and Wellness Center.
We are a call-in line so that you have a live person to talk to help you figure out what to do if you're feeling stressed out or worried, or how do you talk to your kids, and also to help hook you up to resources that might be available.
You can go to northpointhealth.org for more information, or you can call 612-767-9171.
This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health. Minnesota is home to a robust network of more than 300 food shelves that may be able to offer additional food support to families and individuals who are suffering from hunger. Hunger Solutions can locate a food shelf near you. Call the Minnesota Food Helpline at 1-888-711-1151, 888-711-1151, or use the interactive map at hungersolutions.org. This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
You're listening to New Beginnings. New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Joining us right now is Dr. Michael Osterholm. He's a Regents Professor, McKnight Presidential Endowed Chair in Public Health. In November of 2020, Dr. Osterholm was appointed to President-elect Joe Biden's 13-member transition COVID-19 advisory board. That board now has disbanded because of the Joe Biden becoming president. And I read, Dr. Osterholm, where you're predicting yet another pandemic. What is this new pandemic, and will America be ready this time?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. And we're still really in the same pandemic that we've been in since it emerged in China back in almost a year ago. But what we're talking about is a new surge of cases. Basically, as you've seen through the past year, we've had these periods where case numbers increase precipitously and then come back down again, like we're seeing right now. We're in a lull, which is great news. Mm-hmm. But our concern is that with a new strain of the virus, and we call a variant, which is more infectious and more likely to cause severe disease, that we're concerned that sometime in the next 6 to 12 weeks, we could see another really big increase in cases here in the United States.
So can these mutations affect the effectiveness of the vaccines, or do we need a different vaccine for every change in this virus?
Well, at this point, fortunately, the strains that we have in the United States circulating, meaning that they're the ones that most people are getting infected with, has not had a impact on how well the vaccines work. We do have some viruses isolated here in the United States that could possibly do that, could change how well the vaccines work, but they are not widely spreading at all at this point. Now, we're going to have to keep our finger on those and know about that. But even with the strain that we call the UK strain, originated in the United Kingdom, mm-hmm. That one is still a real problem for us because, it does mean that there's a substantially increased transmission and more severe illness. That by itself is a real problem for us.
Everyone, we're talking with Michael Osterholm, Dr. Michael Osterholm. We're talking about vaccines. And I was just reading just late last evening that now we're testing right here in Minnesota vaccines for children. And we haven't heard very much about that until just a couple of days ago.
Well, early on, the vaccine trials were obviously focused on adults, where we tend to, have the best opportunity to do this kind of study to make sure the vaccines are safe and that they're effective. And kids, unfortunately, aren't as up as high in the list right away because we want to show that safety in adults before we ever put a vaccine or a drug into children. And that has now happened, where we have quite amazing safety data with these vaccines. And so the investigations are now going on to look at kids. Remember, even with the previous vaccines, we could still vaccinate 16 to 18-year-olds and higher. Mm-hmm. So that we, in a sense, did get at some of the teenage years. What we're looking at now is the younger kids below 16 to see in terms of, again, how well the vaccine works. And, of course, the issue of safety, that's very important.
Everyone, Dr. Michael Osterholm with us this morning. I know that the president has mentioned that they're sending vaccines directly to the pharmacies. How do we determine who the pharmacies will be inoculating once these vaccines arrive?
Well, this is going to be somewhat of a challenge in that each and every state has to determine how to get the vaccines to those people who have been recommended to get it, in this case, people over age 65. Mm-hmm. And so that, there's no one way to reach all of the population, for example, in Minnesota. Some people have access to getting to their healthcare clinic. Some do not. There are people who are living alone, they're shut in, whatever. And in some cases, getting vaccine to certain communities, such as the BIPOC community, may be very different than getting it to, a suburbia. And so one of the challenges we have right now is making sure that the entire state is covered, making sure that everybody has access to the vaccine who are recommended. So the pharmacies are seen as just one more opportunity for people to get that there. But it is one that is unclear yet how that will work relative to who gets recommended. Do you just call up your pharmacy and say, can I get my shot? How will that work? And so those details are still being worked out yet.
So infections and hospitalizations are dropping, Dr. Osterholm. That's got to be encouraging news. Or is it because we're beyond the surge around the holiday travel, 12,000 cases Tuesday, lowest count since Thanksgiving? What's your opinion on that? And how critical are the next 6 weeks?
Well, in fact, obviously we really appreciate and celebrate the decreased number of cases. But as I pointed out just a minute ago, we have seen these surges in cases increase quickly, dramatically, and then come back down into these lulls like we're in now, and then come back up again. And each time the highs get higher and the lows even get higher. And so here we still are sitting at 120,000, 230,000 cases a day in this quote-unquote low. Remember what it was like when we had 32,000 cases a day in April in New York getting hit so hard, or even the big peak of 70,000 cases in July in the United States. We thought, oh my, it couldn't get worse than this. And here we are, much worse, and we're calling it a low. So I think that's really points out just how our frame of reference has changed about what this virus is doing. Mm-hmm. What our concern is that the new surge with this new strain of the virus could be even much higher than the 300,000 cases a day we saw in early January. That's the challenge we have right now, is that you know, we're far from done with this virus.
The picture you're painting is not good. So what does the long term look like? When will a sliver of normalcy start to return, not only in the United States, but around the world?
Well, you know, at this point, we don't know. And we have to be really honest about the fact we don't know. It is really a situation of what will these viruses do? How will they act? Will they keep mutating and become such that they are able to defeat some of the protection of the vaccine, meaning the vaccines may not work as well? The second thing is, who's going to take the vaccines?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can have all the vaccine in the world, but if people aren't willing to take it, it's not going to do any good. I've said over and over again, a vaccine is just a vaccine. It's not really that important until it becomes a vaccination, until it's a virus, a vaccine in the arm that prevents the virus from infecting you. That's what we need to concentrate on right now.
I know communities of color have a low percentage take rate on this vaccine. What can we do to increase that take rate so that we all can heal from this?
Yes, and that's a really, really important point. We can't emphasize that enough. You know, we've done a really poor job of telling the story of this vaccine. You know, it was produced under a program called Operation Warp Speed, the worst name we could have thought of. And while it still was an incredible effort, not taking any shortcuts with safety or, you know, how well it works, any of those things, you know, it kind of has a bad feel to it by the name. And the military have helped the vaccine, which, of course, makes it even more suspicious. And then these are what we call messenger RNA vaccines, or mRNA vaccines. That's a challenge because it seems to some that, oh, my, they're injecting some kind of genetics into me that will change my genetics, and, you know, the sense of experimentation. None of this is true, but we've not done a good job telling that story. And so why people are suspicious, why people have concerns are very legitimate, and particularly in the black community where, you know, the remnants of Tuskegee hang well over our head, and as they should. We should never forget that, the experimentation that occurred with black prisoners and syphilis. And so I think that at this point, the most important message we can get across, this is a vaccine that could very well save your life and or the life of a loved one. We need to get it, but we need to tell people the story of this vaccine. We need to tell people why it's so important to get it, what the safety issues are. And so, and this has to really be done in large part with the leadership and the direction of the black community. You know, it's important that ownership and that ability to communicate, the credibility is there. It's not in the government. It's not in a lot even of the medical medical facilities. It's really about the community itself providing that leadership.
Give us a ray of hope. What do we need to do? If you will, put your hand on our shoulder, give us a prescription, and tell us how we can be better as a way of saying goodbye this morning.
Yeah, well, I think at this point, you know, it's our science versus the virus, and I've always put my money on the science. That's why I'm in this business. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe in that. And so we, you know, can get through this. We have a lot of opportunity to control what happens in our own lives in terms of how we get exposed to this virus or don't get exposed. We need to work hard to protect our essential workers. Many people listening to this radio right now are people who are having to go to work in the public every day. We need to protect them with the best respiratory protection equipment, you know, the right masks, the right things to do to make sure that they don't get infected at work. There's a lot we can do and must do. And I think we're seeing big changes right now just in the last 2 weeks since the inauguration. We're seeing a whole new focus on how to respond to this pandemic, not one of saying it's going to go away. It's saying it's tough, but we're going to get through it, and this is what we're going to do. And that's really encouraging to me.
All right, Dr. Michael Osterholm, thank you for stopping in this morning.
Thank you.
And we really appreciate the prescription that you've shared with us today.
Well, I appreciate the chance to get the message out. You're an important part of the voice in this community, and we need you. And so thank you very much for being a part of this message. It's really, really important.
I get the feeling we need each other. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, sir. Have a good one. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. I'm Freddie Bell, and welcome back to New Beginnings. And let's turn our attention right now to aging in place. And what is aging in place, first of all? Is maybe you've got a home that you've lived in for 30, 40 years, and maybe you don't want to go to a group home or to live with relatives. You just rather live where you are. Well, the best places to retire list are great conversation starters, but the vast majority of Americans have no intention of making a move in retirement. They want to age right where they are. That's a blind spot that can drag down multiple generations within a family. The 60-somethings who refuse to game out the best moves to make now for their 80 to 90-year-old future selves are unconsciously transferring those hard decisions onto their children and their grandchildren. If you think contemplating a move in your 60s is difficult, the hurdle will be physically and emotionally higher later on. That can lead to the kids scrambling to bring services into your home, a move that often requires them to bear some of the cost. And even more costly is the decision more and more adult children, mostly women, make to quit their jobs to care for an elderly parent. That puts their own household futures, retirement security, at risk. And that can trickle down to their grandkids as well. Not just in a tighter college budget, but the increased risk that their parents will not be set up well to afford retirement. So while in your 50s and 60s and in good health, it's important to take a clear-eyed look at what you might consider doing now to make your retirement work for you and your entire family in the future. And that could include discussing this wish with your adult children. Can you really afford to stay put? The goal should be that you can cover basic living expenses from guaranteed retirement income, Social Security, and a pension if you have one, and any required minimum distributions from traditional 401ks and IRAs. Even if you own your own home and have the mortgage paid off, don't lose sight of property tax and maintenance. If you don't live in a region that offers property tax breaks to older homeowners, you also need to bake in that your property tax bill will continue to climb over a long retirement. No idea how to scope out the future cost of staying put? Well, there are plenty of certified financial planners you can hire on an hourly or project basis to help you to crunch those numbers. Is it safe to stay put? The vast majority of homes do not have a layout that works well for seniors. Too many stairs, no bedroom bath on the entry level, a shower that requires stepping into a tub. The time to make those age-in-place renovations is now in your 50s and 60s. And consider the psychological safety of where you live. Do you and your family need to travel a long distance, on busy roads, to see each other? Is there a big stair climb into your home? Can these obstacles be overcome, and can they be obstacles to social connections later on? Can you help your kids by moving closer? Maybe not into their homes, but maybe out back, perhaps. Converting a garage into a small home or a building, a separate small unit that brings you all close while maintaining some healthy distance. Some communities are becoming open to allowing homeowners to build accessory dwelling units. This is becoming really popular. And if you're game for a bigger retirement relocation, focus on future needs, not just today's wants. Warm weather is a popular criterion for best places list, but a nonprofit consortium that tracks every state's level of support and services for long-term care needs, Florida's overall is at the bottom. The states with the highest scores across five broad categories, cost of care, support for family caregivers, etc., were right here in Minnesota, Washington, and Wisconsin. You can learn more at longtermscorecard.org. We've been talking about the best places to retire and aging in place, aging where you are right now. And the big takeaway today is that if you're in your 50s or 60s or you're approaching that age, now is the time to start making those plans, not by yourself, but also with your family. I'm Freddie Bell. You're listening to New Beginnings, and our program continues right now.
This is the Real Possibilities Update, your guide to all the exciting things that are happening with AARP in the Twin Cities. Because if you don't think real possibilities in the Twin Cities when you think AARP, well, then you don't know ARP. You see, AARP is hosting free Movies for Grown-Ups screenings at theaters across the metro. They're helping protect families from identity theft and scams with the AARP Fraud Watch Network. And AARP volunteers are helping people in need complete their tax returns free of charge. So whether you're a caregiver, someone who's trying to save for retirement, or if you just want to save money and connect with friends and neighbors for fun at local events, then AARP has resources for you. Get to know AARP and see all the real possibilities right here in the Twin Cities at aarp.org/Twin Cities.
Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment. Every day is a chance for a fresh start.
Minneapolis Public Housing is right now on New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Good morning again, everyone, and welcome back to New Beginnings. Great time we're having this weekend. And with us now is a property manager for the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center, Kitty Harris. She's here to talk about a really important undertaking right now with the center itself and working with partner communities. Kitty Harris, good morning and welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Freddie. How are you?
Unbelievable. I'm looking into 2021 with bright eyes and anticipation that over time we'll get back to normal. And speaking about getting back to normal, the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center and Minneapolis Public Housing Authority is doing a lot of work with community organizations around COVID-19.
Yes. So as we all know, the state of Minnesota has been slowly but surely receiving COVID-19 vaccinations to be issued to the community. And so what MPHA has been doing right now is we have partnered with Volunteers of America, and we are providing vaccinations to public housing residents as they become available in some of our senior living facilities. And we have also partnered with CAFIA, which is one of our on-site partners at the center as well, to provide vaccinations for our residents that are in assisted living, the frontline workers, the MPHA employees that deal with those buildings on a daily basis, as well as all of the staff.
Interesting. So you're dealing with vaccinations. From what aspect are you working? Because I'm understanding, too, that vaccinations or the medicine is in short supply in the state of Minnesota.
It is in short supply, and we have been fortunate to be able to receive some of these vaccinations for our most vulnerable adults. And so that's where those community partnerships have been integral and our healthcare organizations getting access to them and being able to issue them to our residents at a speedy process, as well as our MPHA staff that are in those buildings. Some may have seen that our executive director, Abdi Wasarmi, was able to get the vaccine, as well as our director of low-income public housing. And so, again, as it is becoming available through these partnerships, we are getting access to it for our residents first, our nursing staff that are serving our residents, and then our frontline workers that are there in those buildings on a daily basis.
So what do the residents have to do to avail themselves of the vaccine, if anything?
All they have to do, every resident that is in our senior high-rises are offered the vaccine. We do know with anything, you know, everything, when it comes to vaccinations, it is a personal choice. So our residents, as they become available to each individual building, are being offered them first. the residents do have the right to decline, and then it's gone on to the next staff person or nursing staff that is there. But it's more so just them telling us if they would like to be vaccinated or not.
Wow. Have you had a lot of questions from the residents about how effective the vaccine is? Is it safe and that type of thing so far?
Yes, of course. That's one of the things that not only our residents, but as well as our staff are constantly asking. With such a fast-track vaccine, people always want to know what are some of the healthcare effects that could come. And we just try to let people know as soon as we get information, we're able to share it with them. That's kind of the benefit of us being in partnership with North Point Health and Wellness. We have access to a community medical clinic that can share things with us and can help to break it down. So we have held several calls within our buildings with our resident councils to kind of just educate people and have nurses on those lines to kind of ask those basic questions and provide information as it is available to us. We are providing it to the residents as well as the community.
Before we have to step away, just a couple of questions. How many residents do you look to vaccinate before the program is completely over?
We are hoping to have all of our high-rise residents vaccinated as of right now. MPHA does have specifically 10 senior designated buildings just on the north side, which roughly houses a couple of thousand residents. And so, of course, all of our residents in our inventory for this city of Minneapolis is over 25,000 people. And so the goal, of course, would be to have all of our residents vaccinated at some point as this rollout continues. But right now, definitely our senior designated buildings are our top priority.
Is this provided at no cost to your residents?
Yes, the vaccinations, they have a thing on the form, like any other form, when you go in, right, and it says, do you have insurance or do you don't have insurance? And, of course, the insurance, if you have it, they always want you to check it. But if you don't have it, it is being provided at no cost.
All right. You mentioned North Point as one of your collaborative partners. Any other organizations working with the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center and MPHA to make this possible for your residents?
Yes. Cassia has been a tremendous partner. MPHA has partnered with them for over 20 years. They are formerly with Augustana Care. And so they have assisted living programs inside of our MPHA buildings. And so they have been able to actually facilitate those vaccination clinics for us, as well as Volunteers of America, who also provide services through assisted living for our residents. And so they have been hosting clinics in our facilities and issuing shots as well. So we are very excited to continue to have these partnerships with them. And then we also do have a partnership with Fairview, and we have access to those nurses coming into the buildings and helping as needed as well.
Final question, how long is the program going? When does it start, and when do you anticipate that it will end?
Well, it's already started, and it's up and rolling, and we're as they're becoming available, we are scheduling clinics in our buildings and getting people vaccinated on a daily basis, and it will continue until all who want a vaccination receive one once we get all of the vaccinations into the state of Minnesota. So as they roll them out to us, we roll them out to the residents immediately, and we'll keep going as long as we have to. This COVID-19 struggle is still in its early stages, even though we're almost a year in, but the vaccination process is, we still got quite a few months ahead of us for this.
All right. Well said. That's Kitty Harris. She is a property manager for the Cora McCorvey Health and Wellness Center, and you're listening to New Beginnings.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
And now it's time for this week's Point of Focus.
I have a great time with my life, and I want to share it.
Nowadays, a lot of people think of positivity and optimism as something unrealistic, something almost delusional. It teaches the cultivation of peace of mind as a power center out of which comes driving energy.
This is life and enterprise management.
I love living. I think that's infectious. It's something that you can't fake.
If you want to do more, gain more, or be more, that's prosperity, our point of focus. Even though abundance and prosperity is as vast as the ocean, you can only carry as much water as your container will hold. If you want to enjoy more, if you want to experience more, if you want to have more, you have to come to the party with a larger container. You have to prepare yourself. You have to get ready. You have to be in that moment and be ready to experience prosperity no matter how it comes. So when you come looking for water, bring the largest container you can find. And after you fill that container, be sure to share it with others. That's our point of focus, prosperity. I'm Freddie Bell. If you'd like to learn more, all you have to do is visit me at www.freddiebell.com or call 888-639-9738. Or you can reach me by email. It's freddie@freddiebell.com. freddie@freddiebell.com. As we continue with New Beginnings, we now turn to Unity South in the Twin Cities, where the Reverend James Stacy is the senior minister. More information is found at unitysouth.org. Here now is the Reverend James Stacy with a lesson already in progress.
It's a feeling of the heart when we in this life face times of troubled waters, not only for ourselves, but for those for whom we care. I just received word this morning that one of my friends back in Missouri who attended my church there and is now in a care facility has been moved to isolation, for they fear she has the coronavirus. And so my heart goes out to her in prayer. There's nothing that I can physically do, but I can stand and witness to her ongoing life and power as she moves through this process. Another friend close to my heart, back in the Northeast, like so many in this country, overnight lost income, has nothing coming in as business shut down, and he's in a service industry that simply cannot function under the current social distancing policy. And again, I found I had a choice. I could hold him in thoughts of worry and despair, or I could choose to hold him in a prayer that sees a higher power that will in time lead him into prosperity. There's an old 19th century hymn. Actually, it was written about the same time that Unity got its start, in 1889. Its lyric begins, "Throw out the lifeline across the dark wave. There is a brother whom someone should save. Throw out the lifeline. Someone's drifting away." It's a call to altruism or the willingness to help others in dangerous situations. Our world today is heroic with first responders and caregivers who risk their own safety in order to save those in danger of COVID-19. No doubt they are throwing out the lifeline to other lines of help and power. However, my topic today concerns those invisible, silent lifelines we can throw out to those in trouble. Traditionally, such lifelines are called prayer. But before some of you may envision folded hands, closed eyes, a bowing or kneeling posture, I want to turn our attention to a contemporary well-known chant. Our thoughts are prayers, and we are always praying. Our thoughts are prayers. Listen to what you're saying. Last week, if you joined us for service, our speaker, Kelly von Heidenkopf, asked us to consider our prayers. Very simply, are our prayers a prayer of no or a prayer of yes? And so I'd like to develop this idea today. Whether you call it prayer or meditation or a spiritual practice or simply the thoughts you are holding in mind hour by hour, day by day, consider, are they prayers of yes and affirmation and hope and power? Or are they prayers of no? Now, prayers of no can be helpful when they are seen as a prayer of letting go. No, I will no longer hold to that idea. But the more powerful prayer is the affirmative thought that sees the power of life within us, that sees a power that can sustain us and lead us through these experiences that we call the human life. So today we will not be exploring methods of prayer, nor the history of prayer within religious traditions. Instead, I'd like us to consider the potential and the effects of a consciousness and consistent pattern of thought that Unity calls prayer. In the beginning of our Unity tradition, I believe there was a balanced presentation of the practice of prayer for one's own inner development and as a blessing that we extended to others. One of our longest activities in the Unity movement is our international prayer ministry known as Silent Unity. It began in 1890 as an invitation to people to come together and hold a focused thought. The thought was published by Unity's monthly magazine, Unity, so everybody knew what the focus would be. And people who were willing gathered at noon and again at 9 p.m. each day to collectively join in that thought of silent unity, that oneness found in prayer. The thought, later described as a prayer of affirmation or release, was a benefit to the individual and to lift the collective consciousness of humanity. In other words, it was a thought that linked the individual and the collective with a truth principle, an idea that grasped the eternal or lasting qualities of life. I hope you notice the distinction of prayer for the individual and the community in our very order of service every Sunday. We join in a community prayer that focuses on a collective affirmative idea for our church, our community, our nation, our world. And I will often, in contrast, at the end of a lesson, invite you into a visualization or inner prayer that is for your own development. for your own inner imagination of how your life is evolving. So we have a time that we pray together for the good of all, and then we have a time that we pray individually for our own understanding, peace, healing, and development.
You just heard a message coming from the Reverend James Stacy, the senior minister of Unity South in the Twin Cities. More information is found at their website at unitysouth.org.
Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
If you are ready to reinvent, recalibrate, or retool your career, Ripple Connects can help. That's RippleConnects.com. We work one-on-one with our clients in a safe, collaborative fashion designed to significantly improve the likelihood of landing the ideal engagement. Take control of your job search and create your ideal future. Engage with Ripple Connects, where we turn candidates into contenders. For more information, RippleConnects.com.
You would do anything to protect the ones you love. Help make sure your child is protected from dangerous diseases by getting them vaccinated. Talk to your child's doctor about staying on track with recommended vaccines during this COVID-19 pandemic.
This message powered by the Minnesota Department of Health.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Thanks for making us a part of your weekend on New Beginnings. This is Freddie Bell reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.